to the west coast, where, 8 months later, he chanced upon him. Standing in the street, his face newly scarred, his chest newly thickened, counting coins into Te Rau Taufare's hand. Arsuk found Arqui sitting cross-legged on a shelf of gravel some few feet from the boundary peg that marked the Aurora's southeast corner. The goldsmith held a prospector's dish in both hands, and he was shaking the dish rhythmically, flicking out his wrists in the confident motion of a man long practiced in a single skill. There was a lit cigarette in the corner of his mouth, but he did not appear to be smoking it. The ash shredded finely down his tunic as he moved. Before him was a wooden trough of water, and beside him an iron crucible with a flattened spout. His rhythm followed a circular pattern. First he shook the largest stones and clods out of his dish, keeping to a persistent tempo so that the finest sands tumbled by degrees to the bottom of the pan. Then he leant forward, dipped the far edge of the pan into the clouded water, and with a sharp movement tilted the pan back towards his body, swirling the liquid carefully clockwise to create a vortex in the dish. Gold was heavier than stone and sank to the bottom. Once he skimmed the wet gravel from the surface, the pure metal would be left behind, shining wetly, tiny points of light against the dark. Arqui plucked out these glistering flakes with his fingers and transferred them carefully to his crucible. He then refilled his dish with earth and stones and repeated the procedure with no variation whatsoever until the sun sank below the treetops to the west. The Aurora was a good distance from both the river and the sea, an inconvenience that accounted in part for its undesirability as a gold mine. It was necessary for Arqui to transport his own river water to the claim every morning, for without water his task was all but impossible. Once the water was clouded with dirt and silt, however, it was very hard to see the gold, and he was obliged to tramp back to the river in order to fill his buckets again. A tail race might have been constructed from the Hokitika River, or a shaft might have been dropped for a well, but the gold mine's owner had made it clear from the outset that he would spare the Aurora no resources at all. There was no point. The 2 acres that comprised the Aurora was only barely payable ground. It was only a dull patch of stones, treeless. The tailing pile at Arqui's back, testament to long hours of solitary industry, was long and low, a burial mound under which no body had been interred. Arqui looked up as Arsuk approached.
Niho! Niho! Niho!
The two men regarded each other with neither hostility nor kindness, but the gaze they shared was long. After a moment, Arqui plucked the last of the cigarette from his mouth and flicked it away over the stones.
"The yield is small today," he said in Cantonese.
"A thousand sympathies," replied Arsuk, speaking in his native language also.
"The yield is small every day."
"You deserve better."
"Do I?"
said Arqui, who was in an irritable temper.
"Yes," said Arsuk. "Diligence deserves to be rewarded."
"In what proportion? And in what currency? These are empty words."
Arsuk placed the palms of his hands together.
"I come bearing good news."
"Good news and flattery,"
Arqui observed. The hatter took no notice of this correction.
"Emery Staines has returned," he said.
Arqui stiffened.
"Oh," he said, "you have seen him?"
"Not yet," said Arsuk. "I am told that he will be in Hokitika tonight, at a hotel upon Revel Street, where a celebration has been planned to welcome his return. I have been invited, and as a gesture of my good faith, I extend my invitation to you."
"Who is your host?"
"Anna Wetherill, and the widow of the dead man Crosby Wells."
"Two women,"
said Arqui skeptically.
"Yes," said Arsuk.
He hesitated, and then admitted what he had discovered that morning, that in fact, Crosby's widow was the very same woman who had operated the White Horse Saloon in Darling Harbour, who had testified against Arsuk at his own trial, and who had once been the lover of his enemy Francis Carver. Formerly Lydia Greenway, her name was now Lydia Wells. Arqui took a moment to digest this information.
"This is a trap," he said at last.
"No," said Arsuk. I came here of my own accord, not under instruction.
This is a trap to capture you, said Arqui. I am sure of it. Why else would your presence be so specifically requested at the celebration tonight? You have no connection to Mr. Staines. What purpose can you serve in a party to welcome his return?
I am to play a part in a stage drama. I am to sit on a cushion and pretend to be a statue.
This sounded foolish even to Arsuk. He rushed on.
It is a kind of theatre. I shall be paid a fee for my participation.
You shall be paid?
Yes, as a performer.
Arqui studied him.
What if the woman Greenway is still in league with Francis Carver? They were lovers once. Perhaps she has already sent word to him that you will be present at the party tonight.
Carver is at sea.
Even so, she will notify him as soon as she can.
When that happens, I will be ready.
How will you be ready?
I will be ready,
Arsuk said stubbornly.
It does not matter yet. Carver is at sea.
The woman's allegiance is with him, and you have sworn to avenge yourself upon him, as she must remember. She cannot wish you well.
I will be on my guard.
Arqui sighed. He stood, brushing himself down, and then he paused, inhaling sharply through his nose. He advanced several steps upon Arsuk and gripped his shoulders in both hands.
You reek with it, he said. You are reeling on your feet, Suk Yongcheng. I can smell the stink of it from 20 paces.
Arsuk had indeed detoured past his den at Canieri to smoke his late afternoon pipe, of which the effects were very plainly visible. But he did not like to be chastised. He wrestled himself from Arqui's grasp, saying sourly,
I have a weakness. A weakness,
Arqui cried. He spat into the dirt.
It is not weakness. It is hypocrisy. You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Do not speak to me as to a child.
A man addicted is a childish man.
Then I am a childish man, said Arsuk. It is not of consequence to you.
It is of great consequence to me if I am to accompany you tonight.
I have no need of your protection.
If that is what you believe, you are deluded,
said Arqui.
Deluded and a hypocrite,
said Arsuk, feigning astonishment.
Two insults, when I have been nothing but courteous to you.
You deserve to be insulted, said Arqui. You indulged the very drug that killed your father, and you have